Saturday morning to you out there, wherever you might be this Saturday morning. This is Real Life Real Talk. I'm Rob Hall, along with Beth Guckenberger. Good morning, Beth. How are you?
Good morning. Happy Saturday morning.
There's happy Saturday morning to you.
You know, it just says, the Saturday morning, the start of a weekend, it just says a deep breath to me, you know? I hope
it
people
does.
Are on their way out to breakfast. That would make me the happiest, to imagine you
or
all
a soccer
on your way
game
out.
Or maybe if it were me, I would hope that I was lying in bed and the radio came on as sort of the alarm or something, and I was relaxing.
We could be their first voices of the day.
That would be really frightening. The first voices of the day are us, like, hey, what's going on?
Good morning.
That'd be a little crazy. How are you doing? How's Mexico today?
You know, bright, hot, and sunny, like pretty much always.
Yes.
Speaking of waking up this morning, right before I got up for the show, my husband and I were talking about the first thoughts that cross through our mind when we wake up. And I told him,
This would be an interesting conversation. This could be a question for our listeners for the day. Your first thoughts when you wake up in the morning.
Okay, so we've been waking up next to each other for like 2 decades, and we could not stop laughing at the differences in the ways in which the very first, you know, you're not conjuring them up. You're not like
right.
The intent. They're just like the first things that cross through your minds. Okay, so his first thing that crosses his mind always is the weight of responsibility he carries in his job life and professional life and all the things
I believe
he needs
it.
To do. That's the first thing that crosses through his mind, like his
to-do
list scrolls through his mind. I tell him that every morning I immediately start saying the things that are true, like his mercies are new every morning. I have a fantastic day ahead of me. They just come to my brain, like good, positive, true thoughts. Come to my brain as soon as I wake up.
I have two quick thoughts about that.
This is an incredible
one. I think that's really, really cool. I mean, I do. I think that's awesome. The other thing is you're the weirdest person that I have ever met. I mean, I wish that I would wake up and that would be my first thought. That would be great. And I'm really, really pleased for you that that's your first thought. But then really, the first reaction to that was, you're a loon. I don't know anybody like you.
Well, listeners, I bet some of you out there are just like me, and you need to call in or write in or email us or send us a message and tell me that I am in good company. Because, I mean, he just started laughing. He's like, quick, right now, what was the first thing? And I said, I thought to myself, this is going to be an incredible day because we have incredible potential and incredible things.
Oh, my gosh.
It's the truth.
I mean, that's awesome. That's great. That's why you're you. That's why you travel around the world and write 4 books and have 58 children. And
I don't think
that's a positive thought. It's just like, okay, this is going to be great, you know?
It's going to be great. Okay, what about you? What's the first thing you think of when you wake up in the morning?
Probably the absolute first thought is,
we're
is
on
it
Christian
morning
Radio.
Already?
Okay.
Is it morning already? That's probably my first thought. The second thought is
talking about your sleep deprivation in recent shows. You sleeping better
these
days after the sleep?
Oh my gosh, yes! I got my CPAP machine for all those people out there who have sleep apnea, and the difference is unbelievable.
Oh.
Unbelievable, but it still doesn't matter. I still, you know, my first thought is it morning already, and the second thought is how long can I lay here until I have to get up?
Yay! I think that's
just because I'm comfy. I like laying around and you know just kind of easing into the day. Drives my wife out of her mind.
She springs out of her bed.
She doesn't spring out of the bed, but she is definitely, she's an okay morning person, and she wants to be a better morning person.
Uh-huh.
So she likes the quiet of the day or whatever, and I'm bound to give it to her. Go ahead. Enjoy the quiet of the day. I'll be laying here.
Enjoy your alone time. You and your coffee mug.
Hey, I got to tell you something exciting.
Tell me.
Okay, so usually we're talking about your exciting stuff, but I actually have something exciting today.
Okay, tell me what you're exciting.
I won a trip to Paris.
Like free one? Like you didn't pay?
It cost me $50.
Holy.
But I won it. And the trip is worth $13,200.
Were you like the Price is Right people when they called your
name? Oh, my gosh. I went out of my mind crazy. I was at this school fundraising thing, a celebration auction. Those of you who, you know, go to independent or private schools, you probably know you have these fundraising things. And so this is where I work. So it's kind of a work environment deal. And Beth knows me well enough.
Did you pay a $50 ticket because you thought to yourself, I might win this, or because you thought to yourself, I better buy a ticket?
Oh, I thought I'd win.
You did. You had the
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It drives Christine crazy. She's much more practical than me. Like when I don't buy lottery tickets, but when it's like $600 million,
uh-huh.
I'll spend $2. And she thinks she's why don't you just throw your $2 out the car window? And it is absolutely true. I've never won the lottery, but for 5 or 10 minutes, that's worth $2 worth of excitement
okay.
once a year.
Okay. Okay.
Right?
So tell me.
So I bought this $50 ticket, and she was mad at me.
She's
like, why are you wasting
$50?
I say, they're only selling 350 tickets, so I have a 0.2 something percentage possibility of winning.
Uh-huh.
One out of 350. So, and she's like, well, you might. And then she got all mad, and I said, well, at least it goes to a good cause. It's
yeah.
$50, it's tax deductible, all that kind of stuff. And I'll save you all the details, but at work, I'm a relatively reserved guy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know,
you
it's just
Dr.
part of
Hall.
The. It is part of the job description.
Uh-huh.
Well, when I won, I acted a fool. I mean, I just was like, yes! I ran to the front of this room full of 800 people, put my arms up over my head, just going, yes! I was a fool. But heck, I mean, I've never won $13,000.
I mean, that's unbelievable. That is unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
Okay, so the person that called your name out, did you know that person personally?
It was my boss.
Did he make eye contact with you? And did you think for one split second, maybe it's my name?
I thought it. And actually, there was a guy sitting next to me, a friend of mine, Dave Stiles, sitting next to me, and he looks at me before the drawing. He says, I think you're going to win.
Prophetic.
Yeah. And so I was like, well, maybe. And then bang.
Oh, my heavens.
The winner. So
and you have
I
all year to use it?
Have all year to use it, yes. There's two things that worry me, and you might be able to help me as a world traveler. And I'm
okay.
sure our listeners are just enthralled by our personal conversation
okay.
right now. But
tell me.
Number one is the place that we're staying,
uh-huh.
right? So this trip is obviously set. It's supposed to be for bigwigs, not for me.
Okay.
Right?
Oh, I love that.
For big donors and all this
yeah.
kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
So the hotel where we're staying, the cheapest room is $1,000 a night.
Yeah. That's because Europe,
so,
you know what I mean? It's still going to be like the size of your you know, fourth
it's
bedroom.
I've seen it. It's a 5-star hotel in downtown Paris. So
ooh.
That worries me because I'm going to make a fool of myself. I don't know what you do at a 5-star hotel. I stay
tip
at Holiday Inn.
You
I stay at the Marriott.
You're
so I'm
like,
okay.
Monopoly money, just give them away as often as you can.
Yeah,
great
so that worries me. And the practical part of me is like, this is going to go on my taxes.
Oh, who the heck cares about that? That is ridiculous.
There are listeners right now who when I said that I won $13,200, they were like, that's going on your taxes, buddy. There are people out there who that was their first thought. Now, it wasn't my first thought. That was their first thought, like, oh, dude, you thought you won a free trip? No way, bro. And $3,000 in taxes, and you're going to have to tip everybody on the planet.
My first thought was February is a lovely month to go to Paris. You got to go immediately.
Well, I don't know. We'll find out. But anyway, that's my exciting news.
Very exciting.
And I hope that some of my listeners, you know, who are like the behind-the-scenes guys like me, some of the listeners would say, hey, all right, way to go, Rob. Some good news for you, brother.
Let's hope we did not encourage them all today to gamble.
No, I would not. I mean, again, I'm not necessarily a gambling man. Anyway, I was going to say, on to bigger and better things. Today's show, Peter Everett's with us.
I know. I love Peter. I met him a couple different times over the years. I mean, first of all, he speaks with an Australian accent, so who cares what he talks about? It's going to sound cool. But way more importantly, he is the executive director of the U.S.-based operations for Destiny's Rescue, a fantastic ministry that works with trafficked young girls and boys and around the world. It's going to be a fantastic interview.
Yeah, I've heard of so many great things about Destiny's Rescue, and it is such, as we've talked about before, such an important thing that Christians need to be aware of, the church needs to be aware of, that this is going around the world, and we need to respond. So he's going to be on right after the break, Peter Everett from Destiny's Rescue. Thanks for joining us this morning. Thanks for listening to our banter about my winning a trip and all that kind of stuff. We hope you're having a great Saturday. We're going to be back right after this. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob. That's Beth. See you in a minute.
He found shelter under the rock and lay there looking at the stars. God, do you remember me? In Tales of the Not Forgotten by Beth Guckenberger, Joel dares to ask for what he can't have. Serafina sacrifices what she can't afford to give. Ibram looks for an answer buried out of reach, and Christina, saved by a mission, searches for her own. Follow these life-changing stories as they take you on a journey to faraway lands and unfamiliar faces. Travel through their challenges and see the hand of the great story weaver writing endings you'd never imagine. These are the tales of the ones the world doesn't see, tales of the not forgotten. In Tales of the Not Forgotten, learn how God is the great story weaver, weaving the threads of our lives into a strong and beautiful sign of His love. Check out Tales of the Not Forgotten book and missions materials by Beth Guckenberger. For more information or to purchase, go to your local Christian supplier or visit standardpub.com. See lives transformed.
Real Talk. I'm Rob Hall along with Beth Guckenberger. We hope you're having a great Saturday morning out there. Good morning again, Beth. How are you?
I'm doing so good. Happy Saturday morning to you.
Hey, I have been looking forward to this show for quite a while. You know, you've told me about Peter and his wife Barbie and their work at Destiny Rescue. And so I'm gonna read a quick bio, but I'm excited to hear Peter and the work they're doing. So I want to sort of introduce him a little bit. Destiny Rescue is a grassroots, internationally recognized Christian-based nonprofit organization dedicated to rescuing children from human trafficking and sexual exploitation. And they operate six nations: Thailand, Cambodia, Laos, Myanmar, which is Burma, India, and Mozambique. I mean, I could read a bunch of stuff here, but we'll let Peter do some of those introductions. Just really excited to have him here this morning.
Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, Beth. How are you doing?
I'm doing so great. It's great to hear your voice. I'm calling in from Mexico. I know that you're all over the place.
Yeah, I'm just coming back from Pennsylvania right now. So we're kind of traveling all over the place as well, which is really awesome to be able to do that, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, I wanted really to take this opportunity to expose our listeners to Destiny's Rescue. And so can you just start here off the bat and tell us a little bit about what Destiny Rescue does and what the problem is? I think most Christians, the church is doing a good job of at least making us familiar with the idea that there are children around the world that are sexually exploited and trafficked. But I'd love for you to paint the picture on how real that problem is, how close that problem is. Tell us a little bit.
Yeah, well, I guess 11 years ago now, Destiny Rescue was founded by an Australian guy, and Tony Kirwan is the president and founder, and he saw it firsthand. He'd had girls offered for sale to him in Thailand, and he kind of researched eventually opened up and started Destiny Rescue and started spreading the word throughout Australia and raising support through there. And me and my wife, we came on board. We found out about it in 2007, and I actually never even heard of human trafficking before, you know, growing up pretty sheltered in the Christian church and everything. So we'd done a trip to Thailand in December of 2007, and during one of our transitions from the Bangkok airport, we're actually in Bangkok, waiting for connecting flights. So we went into a large indoor market not far from the airport. And that's where this lady approached me, and I had my two teenage boys with me. And they sat me down, and she asked me if I could just wait a minute. And it was actually like a shoe stall. So they were selling like sneakers and shoes and things like that. And so she was gone just for a couple of minutes and came back, and she had a little girl with her, and she sat the girl next to me and kind of scooted her up, and she was like, the little girl took one glance at me, and then she stared at the ground and put her hands between her knees, and she was really scared. And the lady comes up to me and says, sir, she said, this girl is for sale, just like that. And she said, you can buy her now, and you can take and you can do what you want with her. And And I was shocked, and I had my, like, my two boys were with me at the time, 12 and 14-year-old. And I kind of went into protection mode. I just didn't know which way to respond. And and that's kind of what birthed the reality of human trafficking. And since then, we've learned that it is in every country of the world. It's the fastest growing area of organized crime in the world today. And it's generating, from what the research is out there, around $32 billion a year. It's absolutely out of control. So since then, I've done work overseas through Cambodia and Thailand, and we're working in some of the largest trafficking areas in the world. One city we work in, there's over 20,000 brothels. And I've had many emotional experiences and being overwhelmed in some of those cities, just the desperation and the young age of these young teenage girls that are, you know, are being brought from their hill tribe villages. And so it is a really big problem. I mean, it's in every country, and, you know, included in the US. But we are targeting the highest trafficked areas at this stage, and that's why where our facilities are. So,
Peter, you know, when that girl was offered to you, that's almost the end of probably a long series of events. What happened to get that girl into that store to be presented to you? How did she get there?
Well, to this day, like, I don't know who that lady was. It could have been a mother, it could have been an auntie, it could have just been a lady that was recruited to traffic traffic girls, because we've had situations in the past where a lot of the traffickers will use women. So we had one girl that was sold for $50 by her father. She was a 12-year-old Burmese girl and trafficked into Thailand. And this particular case, we'd got a phone call, and our guys responded and went up. They drove, rode a couple of hours on their motorbikes and went up to a house that the tip gave us. And they said, you know, this house looks like they're running, girls are coming in and out. So we went in there, and they walked in the door, and there was one little girl there with this lady. And so they questioned the lady, and they took the girl, and they questioned her, and she was explaining to our rescue guys that the day before she was taken around in a van full of other girls and being sold, and the other girls were being sold off into brothels and you know, karaoke bars and different places like that. And she was the only one that came back, and, like, basically she couldn't believe that we were there to rescue her and get her out of that situation before she was about to enter into a life of sex slavery, and where she would just disappear. No one would know. She was gone. No one would be out there looking for her. And that's the case with thousands and thousands of children out there. No one's looking for them. So, and that's what breaks my heart the most, you know.
And you know, you talk about the rescue guys going into the door. I mean, organized crime's not like willingly offering over their drug stash. So how actually do you get girls out of the hands of those who are trying to traffic them?
Yeah, well, basically it's we go in and we pose as a customer. And I've done it quite a number of times myself with the guys. So I'm basically telling you from my experience. So we'll go in, like, you'll be standing outside for a start, and there'll be a door, and you have no clue what you're walking into a lot of the times. So we'll walk in, and there'll be like a commons. There's always like an open area. And then there's rooms upstairs and different things around the place. But you walk in there, and there may be a bit of a stage where the girls will dance, or they'll line up, and they may have a belt with a number on them. And then the mama son, who is the head lady that runs the girls, she will then come up to you and say, what do you want? And then you will say, well, prefer like Sao Sao, which means young girl.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, they haven't necessarily had young girls, but they know where to find them. So they can actually leave and go down the street and go to another work part of their network and bring you younger teenage girls.
Hmm.
Sometimes when I'm with the staff, so I just want to make it clear, we never go in by ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Just there is always a danger element because you never know what brothels run by the Russian mafia or, you know, who's behind it and who's funding it. So you're always very careful and keeping your eyes open. So once you pick a girl, sometimes, well, most of the time I usually get help by one of our staff to say, hey, who do you think is the youngest girl in the crowd here? And he'll say, I'll pick out number, you know, 9 or number 10 and I'll call her over. So you'll go and talk to the mum and son, and then they will bring the girl to you and she'll sit next to you. Now, they've usually got a quota to meet of around 15 to 20 customers a day. So putting that on a monthly basis, you're looking at about 300 customers a month.
Mm.
They push these girls so hard. It is unbelievable. So anyways, these girls will sit next to you and you're not sure how long you're going to be there with them the first time. You don't want to kind of blow your cover, so to speak. So usually the first time you're there, you don't spend too long. It's just an introduction, and the first thing I do is grab hold of their hands because they're very quick with their hands. And you hold their hand and you kind of settle them down and say, hey, it's okay. Well, just taking it easy and you're trying to pretend you're shy kind of thing. And it's very difficult to act like you're a pedophile, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
in those situations. But within, you know, I've had girls within a short period of time, they'll start looking at you and they'll start poking you on the chest. And I've had at least 2 times that I know of girls are like, you're not like other white men that come in here.
Mm.
And they'll poke you on the chest and they'll sense there's something different about your spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And then you kind of, once that kind of engages, then you go, okay, we've got this time to leave now. Before we engage in too much and kind of let on, you know, that we're not there for the first time. So we'll go on and the next night we'll come back, and then usually because they remember that you didn't touch them inappropriately or any of that, they'll come running up to you. We've seen that quite a number of times, and they'll sit next to you and like you hold your hand and you kind of put your arm around it. So we're trying to treat these girls like a father treats his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything's done appropriately.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes your attitude and that kind of thing is like you're interested in them, and then they pretend to be interested in you, and it's all part of the game because they don't know who you are. But then it gets to a time when you will then feel that they're comfortable with you. This could be even weeks in, so. When I specifically go, the guys will use me to bait the girls,
mm-hmm.
so to speak, and to get their details and their age mm-hmm. and everything. And once that information's passed on, we have a network of rescue workers that we can switch it up. So when my mm-hmm. time's done, we may send another guy in, and he's already got her ID as far as the picture. He knows what she looks like.
Mm-hmm.
But then he calls her over and then continues the process until we feel that we can hire her. For short time. So in those countries, you pay a bar fine, and it's a very small amount of money, and then you can take her off site. So we take her off site to a hotel room, and then our
Peter, we're about to go to a break. I just want to make sure that our listeners know we're talking with Peter Everett from Destiny Rescue about their work in rescuing children from sexual trafficking. So it's a heavy topic, but certainly one we need to hear about. Join us right after the break. This is Real Life, Real Talk.
Do you have a family member who's getting older and can no longer be safely left alone? Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care, assists senior citizens and adults to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Visiting Angels has over 400 franchised locations across the nation. Experienced, compassionate caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meal preparation, and light housework up to 24 hours a day. Rates are affordable, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. Visiting Angels has cared for hundreds of thousands of seniors nationwide. Franchises are available. Call Visiting Angels toll-free today at 877-374-LIVE. To find an office near you, visit www.visitingangels.com. For home care for your loved ones, call Visiting Angels now at 877-374-LIVE. That's Visiting Angels, America's choice in home care at 877-374-LIVE.
He found shelter under the rock and lay there looking at the stars. God, do you remember me? In Tales of the Not Forgotten by Beth Guckenberger, Joel dares to ask for what he can't have. Serafina sacrifices what she can't afford to give. Abram looks for an answer buried out of reach, and Christina, saved by a mission, searches for her own. Follow these life-changing stories as they take you on a journey to faraway lands and unfamiliar faces. Travel through their challenges and see the hand of the great story weaver writing endings you'd never imagine. These are the tales of the ones the world doesn't see, tales of the not forgotten. In Tales of the Not Forgotten, learn how God is the great story weaver, weaving the threads of our lives into a strong and beautiful sign of His love. Check out Tales of the Not Forgotten book and missions materials by Beth Guckenberger. For more information or to purchase, go to your local Christian supplier or visit standardpub.com. See lives transformed.
If becoming or staying debt-free is important to you, you're not alone. 10 years ago, I was worried sick, overwhelmed with debt, and so tired of not having enough at the end of the month to make ends meet. I was working a full-time job, but getting deeper in debt every month, and I hated being away from my children. I finally said, that's enough, and I made a decision to do whatever it took to get free from the terrible debt that was causing me so much stress. I'm Gina Neef, and I want to invite you to find the same financial freedom that I found. Not only did I pay my way out of debt, I was also able to leave my corporate job and work from home and be completely available to my family. For years now, I've worked part-time hours, making more than a full-time job would ever pay. I remember the pain of being in over my head, and I'll never forget the joy of becoming debt-free. That's why I show others how to do the same. If you're ready to work from home and find financial freedom, then I'm eager to show you how. Go to findingfreedomnow.com. Discover how you can get free from debt. Go to findingfreedomnow.com.
Last October, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to Nigeria, where I had a chance to meet the boy I sponsored through back-to-back. The moment I met him, it became real that Jeremiah was not just a boy in a picture. He was a boy with dreams, hopes, and a story just like my own kids. At that moment, I saw how back-to-back is changing the lives of orphans around the world. I realized that in the same way I'm here for my children to be part of their stories, I can also be part of Jeremiah's. In the same way that my children can be a brother or sister to each other, they can care for Jeremiah. They can write him letters and share their stories as they grow up. We can help him to receive an education and food to fill his stomach, but more importantly, we can be involved in his life and encourage him to follow his dreams. I learned that sponsoring a child through back-to-back is not just about financial support for an orphan. It is about allowing God to intertwine your story and your heart with a child in need. For more information on sponsoring an orphan like Jeremiah through back-to-back, contact 513-754-0300 or email at childsponsorship@back2back.org.
Talk. I'm Rob Hall along with Beth Guckenberger. We hope you're having a great Saturday morning. We got a pretty heavy topic today. We're talking with Peter Everett, who is part of Destiny Rescue. And so it's kind of a PG-13 kind of morning this morning, but an important topic, one that we have hit on before on our show, and that has to do with trafficking, human trafficking, in this case, the exploitation of children. So, if you got little kids around, probably not the greatest thing for them to be hearing, but it certainly is a PG-13 morning. So, Beth, good morning. Welcome back after the break. Good to see you and talk with you.
Good morning. It's great to be here. Peter, I just appreciate kind of where we just left off, the idea. I think again, as a church, we're talking more and more about this idea that sex trafficking and exploitation of children is a reality, and we're talking about, but I don't feel like we get enough information about how exactly is rescue happening. And of course, our follow-up question will be with you. How is it that we can help you do more of what it is that you're describing? But we left our listeners kind of hanging at the point with which you were developing a relationship with a young girl in a brothel and in your effort or in the process of rescue. Could you just pick up right where you left off for us?
Yeah, for sure. So we'll get to a point where we'll pay a bar fine to the mama son, who's the head lady, and we're not sure who she's controlled by, but it's usually someone, maybe in the mafia or, you know, anywhere from Russians to Chinese, so you name it. They're all around through Southeast Asia. And so once you pay the bar fine, we're able to take the girls off-site, and they just think we're going off-site for short-term sex with them. But we actually have other things in mind. So we will take them to a hotel room, or sometimes we'll meet in a just a quiet restaurant somewhere. And our at least two of our staff that work with the girls on a daily basis, that know the psychological breakdowns, that understand the conditioning that they've already gone through, which basically leaves them feeling absolutely helpless to a point where they feel there is no way of escape, no way of getting out. This is their life. And so once we bring the girls, then the staff will then talk to her, and Rob, we kind of move aside and let them do their job in speaking into the girls' lives. And while doing that, we're always praying, because they say, like, when we're in the brothel, out of the brothel, before we go in, we are constantly praying, because there's an oppression that I don't think most of us would really understand unless you personally have been with these children.
Yeah.
The psychological breakdown is just unbelievable. They call it trauma bonding. There's debt bondage. There's all these issues you've got to break through to say, no, you don't have to go back. You don't owe these people any money. You don't owe these people anything else. You can come with us. You can leave right now. And we're just praying that this girl will say yes. We can't legally take the girl. It sounds ridiculous, but doing things right on our end is definitely more effective when the girl says yes. So we're just praying that the girl will say, yes, I trust you. Because, you know, you think about, we've had girls that have been sold, at least that I know of in our care, that have been sold at least three times to separate buyers. So when we come in and make an offer, it's like, well, am I being set up and sold again? And being made all these false promises of a better life, because that's what they've already been told, and that's how they end up in that situation. But we just believe God that He will, you know, just make a way, and that they will see that we are real. And you know, that's the power of love. And so these girls will say, not all the time straight away, but they will say yes. And then we will just literally take them. I was there in October last year. I did 10 days rescue work with our teams, and I saw a girl being rescued after one of our guys had been visiting her for 8 months. You know,
wow.
We can get the girl the first night, or it can be 8 months down the track. And she was only 15. And so I saw her, our rescue guy, take her, and we were able to take her up to our rescue home in Bangkok, which we just opened a few days before. So she was our first girl in that facility. So that's, you know, that's our method. We've looked at other, you know, methods as far as doing raids on brothels and working with that. The statistics are very low with girls that are being basically pulled out. A lot of them just take off and run. A lot of them will be really scared, and they'll escape one way or another.
But
building a relationship, allowing them to feel the love of Christ, we're finding a lot more girls rescued. And like last year, we got 215 girls rescued that way. And I mean, it's amazing to see their lives just change and them coming to Christ in a genuine and a real way from just responding to the environment. It's just fantastic.
Right. So, Peter, after you mentioned that, like in your facility in Bangkok, that you bring them to a facility. Tell us a little bit about what happens then. You've rescued a girl. You've removed her from the situation. Then what?
Yeah. So just to give you a picture of right now, the busyness of our operations. We have 25 homes, and it's just grown out of control, which is a good thing. 4 years ago, when me and my wife we got involved full time, we had about 50 staff, and we had I think eight or nine homes, and this year we have just over 300 staff and we have 25 homes. So things are growing rapidly. But what happens when a girl comes in, the first thing we do is give them medical attention. We pray over them. We do a full report. And this can also be the beginning of a further investigation for possible prosecution against perpetrators. So we've got to really cover all bases when she first comes in. We find out what village she's from. So to give you an idea, if we're in Pattaya in southern Thailand, most of the girls, 98% of the girls that we rescue are Hill Tribe girls. They're actually not Thai. So they're from these remote villages up north where they don't have any identification, and that's why they're targeted. So we'll get a girl in medical check. So the first thing we do is blood work, and that gives us an idea of what we're kind of looking at as far as maybe HIV positive, other forms of STD. So we have to take that into consideration. And if the girls, so then we, once all the tests are back, then we start a counselling program with them. And one thing we've learned, and it's through a little bit of trial and error, but overall it's been, a good learning process, is the girls, the environment they come into is very important, because they don't want to feel like they're coming into an institution, like they've done something wrong. So it's important that our environment is just full of love and just very relaxed, and we have people around, and their work environment's good, and their schooling and their education. So we're kind of constantly working on that and having lots of activities for them to do, because they are teenage girls and they like to be busy and they don't like to be sitting around doing nothing. So now with hundreds and hundreds of young girls running around everywhere, it's a big challenge. But the process of empowering them is really our first step, getting them to a point where they can stand, knowing that what's happened to them has affected them. But just to kind of give you an idea of our counselling method, first initial step is what they call the umbrella effect. So we need to get the girls like they're standing under an umbrella, and if it's raining, for example, it's raining, but you're not getting wet. So you know what's happened to you, but you're not feeling the effects to a point where it's crippling you still. So that once we get them to that point, then we can just believe God, and through just love and prayer, we're able to, physical breathing techniques and all that kind of thing, they're able to, we're able to speak into their life.
Yeah, Peter. After the break, I'm hoping that we'll talk just briefly about this is an issue that we think is on the other side of the world exclusively. I'd love to talk just a little bit about what's going on in the United States, and then also obviously how we can connect with you, how our listeners can connect with your ministry, how they can support you. So we're going to do that right after the break. I hope people will hold on. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob. That's Beth. Just some really powerful conversation, really the details of what happens when people go into a situation and rescue young girls. So we hope you join us for the end of this conversation right after the break, and we'll see you in just a minute.
Last October, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to Nigeria, where I had a chance to meet the boy I sponsored through back-to-back. The moment I met him, it became real that Jeremiah was not just a boy in a picture. He was a boy with dreams, hopes, and a story just like my own kids. At that moment, I saw how back-to-back is changing the lives of orphans around the world. I realized that in the same way I'm here for my children to be part of their stories, I can also be part of Jeremiah's. In the same way that my children can be a brother or sister to each other, they can care for Jeremiah. They can write him letters and share their stories as they grow up. We can help him to receive an education and food to fill his stomach, but more importantly, we can be involved in his life and encourage him to follow his dreams. I learned that sponsoring a child through back-to-back is not just about financial support for an orphan. It is about allowing God to intertwine your story and your heart with a child in need. For more information on sponsoring an orphan like Jeremiah through back-to-back, contact 513-754-0300 or email at childsponsorship@back2back.org.
Welcome back. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob Hall, along with Beth Kuchenberger, and our guest today, Peter Everett from Destiny Rescue. We've been just having, Beth, we've been having great conversation. This is the kind of stuff that, again, you mentioned earlier, we kind of get this idea that there is trafficking, and it's sort of we, from a 60,000-foot view, wow, I wonder what that's like. Today, Peter is able to give us a ground-level view of what it's like to be in that situation, to be about rescuing girls, the steps that go on. It's really been fascinating to hear how that happens.
And when we left off the conversation, Peter, we were asking you a little bit about what is, you know, I'm thinking our listeners, you've stirred their pot, right? They're like, they're frustrated about what's going on in Thailand and Cambodia. And so in a minute, we'll get to how they can be a part of what you're doing there, how they can give towards that or go and visit that or support you in some way, and I want to talk about every 23 seconds. But right before we get to that, just tell us how close it is it to home. Any of our listeners that are in the continental United States, how frequent is this issue in our within the borders of our own country?
Yeah, well, like I said, it is in every country of the world, including the U.S. And so we've, over the past, I'd say, 12 months, we've, me and one of my co-workers, Dave Grant, we have been meeting with the federal police in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
to do our own research and learning firsthand from law enforcement what is actually going on here in the U.S. and what efforts are being made to, you know, help out and what, I guess, what strategies they have in place here to rescue victims of human trafficking. So we'd had a meeting up in Chicago there, and we had a great time. It's been about an hour and a half a few months ago, just conversing about the issue, and they were telling us, you know, their strategies and what the frustrations that they're finding as well with support and aftercare and that kind of thing. So the reality is it is going on in the U.S., it is important for us to spread awareness and also to educate our children primarily on the grooming process. So, you know, the whole pimp culture, it's good to understand that and to protect our children and youth groups. And there are, you know, kids that are thinking about running away from home, or if they have that difficulty, if a parent is hearing their child maybe implying that they want to maybe run away, they're upset about something. The statistics that we have read and that we've heard is one in four children that run away from home will be targeted within 48 hours by a trafficker here in the U.S.
Wow.
And their estimate is about 100,000 children right now are out and are being trafficked around. I know I met with a police officer out of Dallas and they're running an operation there through truck stops. Mm-hmm. And they said they know of around 1,800 women and children that have been trafficked just through the United States truck stops. And they've found up to 600 unidentified bodies on interstate highways of girls that have been raped and abused and been trafficked and dumped out of trucks.
So here's a question I have, and I had put on my social media last night that we were going to be interviewing you today, and what questions
yes.
did people think I should ask? And one question that I got multiple times are, you know, should we approach someone that we think is at risk? Like if I'm at a truck stop, if I'm in a public setting, if I get the feeling I've walked into something that's a little bit shady, what should our role as the average citizen be? Should we say to a girl, can I help you? Are you in trouble? Are you here on your own accord? Do you need anything? Or are we crossing lines we don't even realize what we're doing?
Yeah, I think the first thing, which we did talk to the law enforcement about this, because we are developing a program which we've been working on for about a year, and it's going to be very powerful. And through our research, it's going to be specifically designed to train law enforcement as well as educate groups and communities across the United States. So the people need to stay tuned for that. But I think our responsibility is to respect and basically support our law enforcement efforts. Now, there is a human trafficking hotline number, so the first thing you would need to do if you suspect anything is to call the human trafficking hotline. They have the resources, they have the response, and they have the contacts even within all areas across the United States. So just so yourselves aren't in danger, I would not recommend you approach, because I've seen undercover video of girls getting in and out of trucks, and there's been a car parked in the back corner of the truck stop that's actually running the girl.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were to approach that girl, she probably scared she wouldn't answer you, because the way they do it, and that I've seen interviews here in the States, they work the girls against each other. So they will make them stand and watch another girl get beaten and abused if they dare let on that they need help or that they're in trouble. So they... So the best thing to do is to call the human trafficking hotline number, which I can give that to you.
That'd be great.
It's 888-37-37-888. It's the human trafficking hotline number.
Perfect.
Yeah.
So
Peter,
you need to put that in your phone and have it as a backup, because at any time you could suspect something.
Yeah.
And don't be embarrassed to call the number, because it could be a life that you're saving.
Yeah. Wow, Peter, just amazing insight, things that our listeners probably would never hear anywhere else, just the insight that you've given them, the on-the-ground, what this looks like. How can our listeners get connected with you, with Destiny Rescue? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, probably the best way, go to our website, that's destinyrescue.org, and our phone number is 574-834-1109. We'd love to talk to you if you have any other questions, and send us an email. But we also have a list of obviously volunteer positions. We're growing at a rapid rate, and we have a 2020 vision, which we really want people to get on board. And that is, our goal is to rescue 100,000 children out of the sex trade by the end of year 2020. And that's only 8 years away. So we need to build an army of people that will stand, that will say this is unacceptable and I won't see that. And if it was my child, and, you know, when I'm sitting with these girls in these brothels, it's like, this is somebody's daughter.
That's right.
If it was my child, I would do anything to get her out.
That's right.
You know, and they're God's children, and we should feel the heart of God to respond to this issue and set these kids free and give them a chance at life and
absolutely
ultimately healing and bring them to Christ, because he's the ultimate healer.
Yeah. Peter, thanks so much for joining us this morning. Just as I mentioned at the start of the show, I've been waiting to hear specifically about this from you, as Beth has talked about that. So blessings to you. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Oh, you're welcome, man. It's such a privilege to be able to be a voice for these kids, because that's my passion, yeah. And I will do anything to be a voice and stand up for them. And yeah, so thank you very much, Beth. You guys are such a blessing to us.
Mm.
And we appreciate your love and friendship. It's just really appreciated, man, and I cherish it.
Amen. I wholeheartedly agree, Co-Laborer. I'll be praying for the rest of your day and your travels. And you need to raise up an army. Consider me a captain or whatever. I'm in the army. I will do whatever we can bring to bear, whatever resource we have for this fight. So I'm all in.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Thanks, Peter. Blessings to you.
Blessings.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Beth, just amazing stuff. I mean, you know, again, we hear about it on the news. 2020 will do a thing about truck stops every once in a while. You know, you'll hear a story. You know, sometimes a missing young girl will come up on the local news, and it'll do something in my brain to say, boy, I wonder about that. This was the down and dirty about what it's really like and what it takes to rescue girls. Millions of them around the world, 100,000 of them in the United States alone. Just really amazing stuff.
It is amazing stuff. And I was thinking, as he was saying, I mean, we really went to a workshop today. This was really the nuts and bolts of this kind of ministry. And if somebody wanted, if you're listening to this and you think, I want to hear the whole thing, I only got the tail end, or I want someone else I know to listen to this, we'll have this archived on the website at BethGuckenberger.com, and you can get that link and share it in your social media and share it to your small group or your youth group, and really continue to spread the word about what this particular organization is doing and just what the need is in general, because we've got to be asking ourselves at the end of a testimony like that, what is my role? I need to know what my responsibility and opportunity is here to make a difference.
I couldn't help but think. You know, I have Gracie. She's 15 years old. Emma, 15 years old. I mean, these are the ages of the girls and younger that Peter was talking about, that they are going to rescue. And, you know, you hear a story, they rescued several hundred girls last year. Man, I mean, it's such a huge problem. We have got to figure out. There's millions of daughters, millions of sisters who are trapped, and we have got to be about that business.
We do, and you think about, we have two choices every single day when we wake up. We build our own kingdom or we build the Lord's. And I just feel like if all I did was focus on my daughter and didn't think about anybody else's daughter, I would be guilty of building up only my own kingdom. And I think that runaway statistic is also just something to note, that we are listening to students when they give us the warning signs.
Absolutely. Well, we hope you will pass on this show, that you'll download it, pass it on, share it on your Twitter, whatever, your Tumblr, your Facebook, whatever it is. Pass it on, just something that needs to be heard. Great show today. We'll be back again next week. We'll be talking some more great stuff again. PG-13 this week, but we're not going to avoid this kind of conversation on the radio. We have to get it out there. So, Beth, thanks for another great Saturday morning. Great hanging out with you.
See you next week.
Yep, we'll see you next week. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob Hall, Beth Guckenberger. Thanks to Peter Everett, DestinyRescue.org, and we will see you next week. Until then, have a great Saturday.